Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
I'm KC.
I'm Tyler.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What is going on, everybody? Guess what? It's kind of whitetail-y out there.
Man, is it?
It is
like 100 degrees right now.
It is a little bit hot, but there's people around the country who are needing some whitetail information. There's people around the country who are hunting whitetails right now.
Needy people.
Deer hunting, man.
Man.
That's what we're here for. So if you didn't know, today, the first episode of Rut Fresh Radio launched, and Tyler and I got co-heirs into hosting that again. Mark's deflecting as usual, but
co-heirs in that podcast.
That's what you're saying. we are hosting Rut Fresh. So if you need the report as to what's going on in your neck of the woods, go check out the Wired to Hunt feed, and that'll be launching on Wednesdays as well. So go check that out. We appreciate the support over there.
There's a lot. There's another commonality in those two podcasts, the Rut Fresh podcast and ours.
Mm-hmm.
They're both brought to you by First Light.
How about that?
Yeah.
Way to go, First Light. Appreciate the help.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Tyler has on a striking First Light hat right now. It's very nice.
Thanks, man.
You're welcome.
I'm not quite the striker that Eric Gentry is. But I'm glad he's on the podcast today. So you normally, when we talk about him, he can't defend himself.
Yep.
You know?
What's up, everyone?
But he's here today. He's got his what are those, chongalas? Is that what they call them, right? He's ready to throw them at us. In case
Chola?
He slides.
Cholo.
The Cholos. Cholo cactus. That's what he's got.
The whole antelope. A whole antelope hunt, man. We were talking about the Cholo cactus. Yeah.
If y'all don't know, Eric is real funny. And he kind of gets the words jumbled up in his head a little bit. And it's not that he's very intelligent, right? But he didn't grow up in the South. So, like, there's words that he's new to. So sometimes he mispronounces them from time to time, and it's real funny for us, and hopefully for him a little bit as well.
Acapatillo.
That's my favorite, dude. What was the iNaturist? I can't even get that one right anymore. And refugee. There's all kinds of good stuff out there,
There's
man.
Some good ones, for
yeah.
Sure.
But today we're going to do a Q&A podcast that a lot of y'all submitted questions and thoughts about the early season, September and October, which, you know, depends on what you call early season. Some people call everything before the rut early season. There's also pre-rut in there. And, you know, around the country, things are doing different stuff, right? That's why whitetail are cool, because they're all over the place doing all kinds of crazy different things, looking all kinds of crazy different ways. However, we have hunted some of those areas around the country, and some of y'all think that we're worth asking a question to. So we're going to give you our best shot at answering these things, and Eric's going to present them to us. But before that, we actually have an audio question from old JC.
Yeah, everything that we're going to hear today mostly is oriented towards that kind of early season pre-rut stuff. I think this some of these are going to be just a little more general and generic, just deer hunting questions too. So you get a little bit of everything. And maybe we can do these more specific as we go throughout the season and hit some of the stages of the season or the rut. But this is JC right here.
See, my question for you guys is, I hunt on about a 1,000-acre farm here in Ohio, and we've just had like a really hard time trying to just like pin down the movement of these bucks that we have on our property. Like we'll get bucks just that will just randomly show up. It's hard to keep them on the property almost, it feels like. It's like 3.5 blocks of woods probably. They're all pretty decent sized woods. But it doesn't seem like the bucks have any rhyme or rhythm to the way they move on the property. So I was wondering if there's any way just to try to either keep them on the property or try to pin their movement down. We probably have 5 cameras out across 8 stands on the property. So yeah, if you guys have any tips or pointers, that would be great. Thank you.
It'd be good to know a little more about the property, but it sounds like food would be a key factor to add to this property. Because he did mention woods in blocks. I'm not exactly sure, but I think that's more like the shape of the timber that he thinks about when he looks at the aerial. And then with that said, it seems like that's kind of like a big feature. So adding food would be probably pretty key. And then it also sounds like to me that potentially that they don't see a whole lot of buck action until the rut. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, it is hard to pattern deer during that time of season. And there's no rhyme or reason to the way they move a lot of times. I mean, there are some subtly, but generally speaking, the only rhyme you can find is that they're going to go after doe bedding and doe and where the does are feeding too. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have the food, then that's exponentially the problem, you know.
Ohio is a state, I believe, that you can put corn on the ground mm-hmm. in piles or from feeders. And if food is the issue, or could even be a secondary issue, you don't have to hunt over it if you got some moral obligation, you know, against it or whatever. But you still could feed the deer mm-hmm. and do that centrally in the property, and that'd be a good way to keep those bucks somewhat on the property. Now they do have to have appropriate bedding, you know. And I'm not a big buck bedding guy. I don't think you can build specific buck beds and all that, but you might make sure that there's a good spot for those deer to hide out. If it is 1,000 acres, it's a pretty good sized place. And a lot of times on places that big, people like to run their ATVs around. Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons that you might not be seeing bucks consistently is they're getting bumped off there a lot. But the does don't seem to be as sensitive to that kind of stuff. And, yep. you know, you just have a big place. So sooner or later, there's going to be some deer on there. So you might look at the non-hunting pressure side of things somewhat, yep. which I guess you could still call that hunting pressure. But, like, I've seen it a lot where – you know, guys kind of treat the two tracks as like a highway. And I'm not trying to be critical of JC and his family or friends that are hunting there, but just thoughts, you know, that might be happening. And maybe, you know, if you're listening, you've had a similar situation. But if you can limit the amount of traffic, vehicle traffic on a place, especially ATVs, because they're loud and obnoxious and to deer, they mean hunting. Mm. You know, like the only thing worse than catching you doing the Sasquatch walk is driving your four-wheeler by them. You know, a truck is a little bit different, you know, because mm-hmm. a lot of times they're used to ranchers or whatever, and they're just kind of quiet and less obtrusive. But those are kind of my thoughts on that, yeah. too.
You know, a lot of people, this is a polarizing guy, but his name is Ted Nugent, and I've listened to him one time say, "So you're telling me I can't take the corn from the field over here and put it over here?"
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's, like you, when you said moral problem with the corn, mm-hmm. it made me think about that. It's like, yeah. man, you know, it's just kind of using like the most basic of human ingenuity to take mm-hmm. the corn from the field and put it a little bit more advantageous for you to
That's
kill
right.
something, you know.
That's right, man. And I mean, I don't really have a problem with hunting over bait at all. I don't sometimes because it's more fun to do something else. But, I mean, if you are trying to be efficient with your hunts, you know, and you are working all week and you got well, how's the line in the song go? Working all week.
I know what you're talking about.
5'3", 300 pounds, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that one. That's a good song. I don't know that song.
So, anyways.
Who's that?
Oliver Anthony.
Christopher.
Christopher Anthony.
Oh, Christopher. Oh,
that seems to be a popular
indie
song
people,
right
indie
now.
Indie people, they know.
That's
they know
it,
his
man.
Actual name.
Redheads, they stick together. Yeah. That's why Eric knows all about him.
Listen, he was indie for like 3 days, man.
That's right. But Yeah, what were we talking about there? Oh, if you're trying to be efficient with your hunts, you know, you got to work all week and you have, you know, four hunts on the weekend or five if you're doing good, then, you know, like, it's probably a pretty good idea to put as many things in your favor as you can.
Yeah, put a fudge round in your pack and go after
That's
it.
Right.
You
know what I mean? Just don't make me pay for them.
So, I don't know. It's that's a good point, though. Like, man, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably like to hunt and shoot things, man. Mm-hmm. And we can go out and be hikers and nature lovers and stuff like that if you want. But I kind of have, like, I have some goals when I go out hunting. And if I'm carrying a weapon, it's usually because I'm trying to shoot something. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
We're going to have a Texas lease this year, and we're going to have corn on the ground at the Texas lease. Guarantee you. Because you know why?
We're shooting 50 cows.
That's right. If we didn't, the deer would be eating corn elsewhere.
I guarantee you they would.
So, anyways, that we might have even just kind of gone too much of a side trip on your question there,
we did.
JC. But,
I think we answered it for the most part. But, yeah, I think those are things you got to think about. Man, that's a good point about the ATV stuff. You know, like, bigger properties can be that way. And also, you know, with those ATV trails, like, people don't want to maybe like to think about this, but those things might just go through some of the best habitat on the place. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about, like, some of the problems we had in Arkansas last year where ATVs were driving in the only dry spots around, right? They're on the high ground. So, they're, you know, where a deer, where you might want to hunt a deer is might have an ATV trail right down the middle of it. So, anyway, things to think about. We've got a billion questions, so we should probably answer a little faster.
All right. What are you running cams over, and how long are you leaving them if you're not getting pictures?
I haven't run one over yet.
Nice. I almost ran over yours today back there. I had to do like 9-point turn around back here by your deer feeder. But right now I'm running one camera over corn, and it's running the battery dead because it's taking so many pictures because the deer are just hammering it because we're in a drought. If you're hunting public land, it's a good time of year to go out and maybe find those scrapes that are going to start being active, you know, like the perennial licking branches, trails, fence crossings, creek crossings. Those are all things that we would run cameras over this time of year. Just haven't done – have gotten to where we don't run a lot of cameras preseason. It's almost not worth it because those things shed their velvet, and at least where we live around, they shed their velvet mid-September, and around September 25th, they change everything they were doing, and it's hardly worth running a camera early. Now, if you want to move that into October, that's a great time to start thinking about those scrapes and stuff like that because those things are just going to start working and work better and better throughout the season. Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts on that?
I would say that I have seen some people send me some pictures of deer that have already shed their velvet. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe with the drought, these deer just stopped growing earlier because they just weren't eating good nutritious stuff or something. Maybe, I don't know. Or maybe just their velvet got sunburned, you know, or whatever. But anyway, I think that potentially if you're going to go like what Casey gave you that number late in September, maybe you could get them out earlier and do decent with deer that have already relocated after the velvet shed. But yeah, I would just emphasize trails as being, especially trails headed to food, right? Or trails near bedding. They don't have to move far in a lot of places, especially when there's not a drought like we've got. If you're in an area that there hasn't been really drought, then they don't have to move far at all. So it's hard to catch them doing anything. But, yeah, right now trails and scrapes in the near future.
He asked when would you move them. I really don't intend on moving cameras too often when I put them out. We run a lot of cell cameras nowadays, and usually if I'm putting a camera out, I'm actually probably collecting data later in the year with that camera. So, like, I don't do a lot of camera shuffle, but I know in the upper Midwest that's a thing. People do that a lot. So I don't really, like, if you're not getting pictures for a couple nights, just wait till about October 18th. You'll start getting a few pictures.
Yeah, I think in the South, cool weather is going to help a lot.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next question is, what are some creative ways you found good access for morning hunts?
Just don't walk through the bedding or the where they're feeding, I guess, for the morning hunt. I mean, there's obvious stuff, right? Like, you can do water access stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. One thing for me, like, if I'm hunting This is considering this is September, October mainly focused. Stuff that's closer to the road can be good. I think about South Dakota in 2021. We didn't really have to go far in, but there's so many times that I've been able to access from the road and not have to walk through a bunch of stuff because, you know, those deer, they know they can just sit there and hear cars all day, and if it never gets any closer, that doesn't bother them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So if a car does not get off the road or do something weird and they're just going by, those deer, they see it every day, so it's no big deal. So I think of that as like, being fairly inobtrusive. And then also, if you can get in early because you're not going very far in, you're hunting close to the road somewhat, you can get in front of those deer that are coming back to bed before they get in there and you mess them up. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's just that's one creative thought that just hit me right off the bat, I guess.
You're a good guy for this because I've seen you do this a lot where you'll be hunting deer that are feeding here and bedding there, and that'll be like, you know, the distance is X, and you'll walk X times 3 to get to that spot to go way around where they're at to not mess mm-hmm. them up. Mm-hmm. And I can think of a spot on Texas Public that is kind of like that, where the deer are feeding on private and they're going to end up on public to bed that afternoon. And if you want to do it right, you got to walk in from the opposite direction as to what is easy to go mm-hmm. do that. So I think it's just in the mornings, it's not about like making sure you're 2 miles back, but it is about making sure that you're not bumping the deer.
Yeah.
Because here's something I'm starting to think about animals. I haven't thought too much about it in my past, or at least like actively thought about it. But an animal's one job is to survive, right? Let's take mm-hmm. deer, for instance. I learned it with antelope too. And like when we're hunting antelope out there, if they caught you moving at all, which they're very good at, they have no reason to say, I'm going to overlook whatever I just saw and I'm still going to go that way. Mm. And deer are probably a lot like that too. Mm-hmm. Like if a deer, especially, if it's not in the rut or they don't mm-hmm. have like one way out of a place or whatever, because deer don't ever do that anyways. They always have an escape from something. But if you give them any reason at all not to go over there, they're not going to do it. They're not going to like overcome something to go where they wanted to go. They're mm-hmm. just going to change their plans. Mm-hmm. So you need to make sure you're not bumping stuff.
That's right. Especially if you want to shoot a big buck. Because mm-hmm. Me and Eric were watching a video this morning of a 2-year-old buck that came really close to us in Kansas one year. And I got some really cool footage of him. He's smelling where we walked into the tree stand mm-hmm. off edge of that field the whole time. But he's 2 years old. So he just lets it be a weird thing. He comes in, even comes in towards our tree and looks, and he's like looking through our tree, like, mm-hmm. where did this person go that's been here in the last couple hours? Mm-hmm. And then he just walks out and goes away. He didn't just keep following and try to find it, but he was inquisitive enough. A 4-year-old buck just might even just literally run away. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen that happen on ground since. So mm-hmm. do you have to be very careful? Good question, man.
All right. Best thing to target going into new public land?
Deer. Yeah, I read that one a while ago. And I was like, oh, there's a sarcastic answer in there.
I'm going to keep on with those answers.
New public land, I think that you need to be looking at the map we use on X, and you need to figure out where you think deer are bedding, where you think they're eating, and try to get in between there. That's probably the thing to do. Now, once you get on the ground, fresh deer sign. I mean, it's mm-hmm. something that I overlooked for a long time, but honestly, I did this last year. Went to a place, and it was mid-October. Never been there before. And wouldn't you know, there's a lot of fresh rubs. We hang a tree stand. We see a lot of bucks. You know, like it's kind of cut and dry. Now, when you start targeting a specific deer, it's different, probably. I don't do that very often. But, you know, when you're looking at a map, food, where they're going to sleep, and then when you get on the place, fresh deer sign.
Mm-hmm. I would say you might have said it in right order that way that time, but definitely I usually try to find food that's close enough that I think deer will designate there, and then I can find from there, I can figure out if there's bedding options for them and how far they are from the food and how far they are from the parking lot, and that'll give me a good idea if that's a place that's worth putting a blue ribbon on or not.
All right. What happened to the podcast? Why no more why no more episodes?
Of podcasts?
Mm-hmm. It's a question.
I don't know.
I don't know.
But probably because they probably asked that because we missed a week.
Maybe. I don't know. But you're listening here. There is a podcast if you can hear us. Yep.
Strategy for extreme heat in Canada.
So, like, what, 60 degrees? I mean, I know global warming, right? It's climate change now.
Whatever.
So, which is funny. So, man, you know, I've never hunted Canada. I'd like to. I've hunted some kind of northerly states that feel like Canada.
You better go before they outlaw it up there.
I mean, I don't think they will let me unless I spend a lot of money with an outfitter. But
that's right. You have to have an outfitter, right?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I would say the strategies would be very similar, like anywhere there's extreme heat. I mean, 95 in Canada might be extreme heat, and 110 would be extreme heat here, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, I'd say water is potentially a thing. I would say that bedding must be, like, sometimes you can find deer that'll bed in sage flats or something like that, you know, or something that's kind of a shorter, you know, bush or whatever. And I would say if there's not shade, then there's probably not deer there when it's extremely hot for that location. So either bigger trees or some sort of evergreen, like a cedar or a pine up there or something like that, or a spruce up there. Anything green food source wise probably would be what they would try to get water from.
One of my main points is I just still don't trust hunting water sources.
I'm not a huge truster either.
I know that Tony Peterson is all about it. And he kills deer on it, but he's very patient, I think, too. Mm-hmm. And so, like, sooner or later, deer will show up. And I think that you have to differentiate between, are you in extreme drought or extreme heat? Is it a hot
for
day?
For sure. I thought the same thing.
Or is it a time where, for the past month, it's been drier than usual? And I think if you are in extreme drought, deer are easier to kill in an extreme drought.
Yeah, I
think they're concentrated. I think they have to move to find food. And it's not always the funnest hunt. But it is sometimes easier to kill deer if you know where they're at because they have to move to go to do stuff. Now, if it's just an extremely hot day in a normal climate, like, it's probably pretty tough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just will hold until it's later. I mean, you can look at trail cameras right now, and on the really hot days, usually the deer are moving later.
Yeah.
And on the normal hot days, they're kind of out. So I think that would be a differentiating thing. But the green food source, I think, is a thing. I think – to go back to the water versus green food, I think that deer don't drink water every day. And sometimes they might. I don't know. But I think that they eat green stuff every day for sure, and they get a lot of water from that. Mm-hmm. So if you can find the green food, it's probably a better thing than the water.
Yeah. There was something else I was going to add. I can't remember what it was. I can't remember. We gave a lot of stuff there, though, I think. So there's some options, man. I mean, kill them. That was it. If it's – you mentioned that they might come out last light because it's just in a hot day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd say, like, if you do the thermocell thing or whatever, it's probably pretty ideal because you need to hang in the stand as long as possible.
What boots do y'all wear?
I wear a lot of different types of boots. I think for – if you want to say, like, for most of deer season – wear lacrosse, it's like the Alpha Agility.
I think that's right.
Is that right? It's a rubber boot that has a lot of neoprene. It's pretty lightweight. Usually wear no insulation.
Yeah.
And then I've got some crispy somethings that I wore, antelope hunting, and I've got some other lacrosse boots that I wear sometimes.
Yeah,
too.
I wear lacrosse Lodestars a lot when I know I'm not going to encounter water. And then the same thing, Alpha Agilities is what I usually hunt a lot in during the season.
Yeah, if you want me to stand behind something, that Alpha Agility.
I like the heck out of it. And here's the thing, guys, is like there are products that are built really tough, and rugged, and there are products that are built light and fast, and there's those things usually almost never can actually fully cross. People can market it that way, but it's not really that way most of the time. These Alpha Agilities are really, really nice, but they are a neoprene top, so... You know, just like a duck wader, you can get a hole in them.
Yeah, I had one tear last year, but I'm hard on them.
You know? We hunt a lot too, and they're just as comfortable. I can walk a mile back in them and not have any issues.
I tore one, I'm still going to wear them.
Oh, for sure, me too.
I'm not like, I'm not wearing those anymore.
Yeah, I could get a new one, but I'm not. I'm just cheap, but you know, they're awesome. Yeah.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today. Because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
Where are the big deer?
Well, I can't remember the law. I never can remember it, but the further north you go, the bigger the animals get. That's, it's like Murphy's principle or something like that. So as far north as you can get, the whitetail exists, would be a good answer for that. And then, there are certain states that it's really hard to get a tag in, and those are other good places.
Mm-hmm. Bergman's rule.
Bergman's rule. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it, man. You can kind of see what the department's management techniques are. If it's an opportunity, it's just like in the Western stuff. Mm-hmm. Like they manage on a unit by unit basis a lot of times, but sometimes statewide too. Mm-hmm. And you know, Colorado is managed on. They want as many people to hunt elk as possible. And there's only a few. There's only a couple of units where like people might take 20, 30 years to draw. And shoot a big one, but the rest of them are, a lot of them are managed just to shoot, you know, nice bulls or smaller bulls. Arizona is a little different. Like it's, I mean, even some of their mid-tier units might take you 10 plus years, you know, so
unless you apply for a cow tag.
Then you get to shoot a big cow.
Then you get to shoot a big old Arizona cow first time.
Yeah, so, but that's the same way with whitetails. You know, they're going to, different states will manage differently. You know, Oklahoma manages so that a lot of people can shoot nice bucks, but not, you know, you don't typically see a ton of just giants coming out, historically speaking, from Oklahoma. There are big bucks, right? But they're in every mm-hmm. state. And that's the thing. That's the beauty of whitetails. A big elk, he just can't hide.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He's like literally can be in the Gila wilderness, right? And be found by somebody and get shot by the governor's tag or whatever. Mm-hmm. A big whitetail can live in a city park and nobody even gives 2 cents about him his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he could be shot potentially, but he's not going to get shot because nobody cares about him in that area.
We love to dream about them city bucks, man.
I'm telling
There's
you.
There's some nice ones.
There are. I mean, that's the thing, though. I mean, I guess that's if that would answer part of his question is like, hey, man, maybe an urban, you know, you see the Seek One guys shoot a bunch of urban big giant deer, and it's because those deer live without people pursuing them for most of their lives. And then also it's tough, right? It's tough to get permission or whatever they might do, or, you know, find a place that you can actually shoot that deer on, even for the guys who are chasing that deer. So,
yeah, I think, you know, I don't know what state you're in, but if you feel like you're in a state that there aren't big deer, it's worth traveling to go see if you can find some, because there are states, I mean, our state's huge, right? But we live in a part of the state where there aren't very many big deer. So it's worth traveling around. And a lot of times you'll learn a lot about where big deer do live when you do that kind of stuff, too.
You can look at the Boone and Crockett map. That'll help you make decisions, too.
Do you guys key in on food or bedding more this time of year?
Really food, probably, for me. Like, I can – if the food sits in the right spot and it's the right type of food, I can probably find where some deer will be. And if I do that 3 or 4 times, I can find a buck that's a shooter buck, probably, you know, in one of those spots.
It's really like the line between the two things. You know, you're trying to set up in the most advantageous place for you as a hunter between where the deer spend its day and where it's going to spend its night.
Mm-hmm.
But the food is a lot easier to figure out and probably a lot more important because most of the time there's one good food source. Or, you know, or a destination, but that deer might can bed 100 places.
Yeah, a deer needs like 8 square feet to hide, you know.
Exactly. So the food is the thing you find first.
You make a good point, though, about setting up in between, Ryan. I was thinking about it from a scouting standpoint, but from a setup standpoint, generally speaking, if that's what you're talking about, you would want to set up closer. If you don't know where it's bedding, you want to set up closer to that food source in the evenings. And then if you can figure out where it's bedding, you can hunt mornings and set up closer to the bedding in that situation.
Yeah, that actually is a good thing to bring up, man, because you don't want to hunt in the evening. Well, you could, and it might would work out for you. People shoot deer with soybeans in their mouth, right? Mm-hmm. But most of the time, a big buck is going to arrive at the food source usually later, maybe even after shooting lights. So it's good to kind of push in a little bit, you know, backtrack from that food.
I'm thinking I might shoot one with beans in its mouth this year.
That'd be cool.
I'm going to try, dude.
That'd be awesome. Man, you watch some videos from some of the Realtree guys or whatever, and they're out there at 4:30 with deer in the field just eating alfalfa.
It looks fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to make that happen.
Let's do it.
Is there plenty of public to hunt in Texas?
No.
Well, it depends on...
If you're trying to hunt doves, then there's...
Yeah, for real.
...some places. I mean, there's plenty for the amount of people that are doing it, but I wouldn't say that it's a destination.
It's not like there's other places where you'd have more space for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've hunted November, second week in November in Iowa and seen nobody.
Yeah,
on public.
Yeah,
that doesn't happen in Texas.
No, I would say like if you're wanting to come try it, do it. But if I'm speaking like logically to you, and I'm not trying to mislead you and tell you don't come to Texas, but literally if you're in another state, don't make Texas a public land destination because you could be more efficient with your money.
Also, if you have some sort of private connection or just a little extra dime to spend on some private permission in Texas, that is certainly the way to go.
Oh yeah.
But, you know, it goes back to like the you know, can I move the corn over there and hunt? And, I mean, if you got a problem with that, and you if you got a problem with if you want to hunt and make it harder on yourself by hunting public land and give yourself a challenge because you're you know so good a hunter or whatever it might be, or you just if you're bored or whatever, then go do it. I mean, for sure, go give it a try.
Yeah,
it's just to me at this point, I get a little bit frustrated when you know I walk into a spot that's a really good spot that I've map scouted or something, and there's a tree standing there and a camera that's taking my picture, and it just feels like a dude was in here 2 days ago on Saturday. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, or just plain and simple, like we had a dude that killed a deer in a spot the day before we hunted it, and then he came in and got his stand the next morning while we were in there at 7:50 in the morning, you know. Messes your whole I mean and when you get up at 4 a.m. or 3 a.m.
it hurts
you, man. It's not fun. Like, and of course stuff can happen on private, but it is just way less likely.
Tips for hunting early season mornings.
I use a 3-blade mechanical.
That was a good one, man.
Dang, dude.
You're moving fast.
I'm gonna keep on.
Early season mornings, we kind of covered a little bit of that earlier, but I think it's don't bump the fields or the food sources when you're trying to go in where you're going to hunt. Y'all, if you listen often or you watch stuff, you know that I actually really like mornings in the early season because you get a lot more cooler time of day in the early season in the morning. So I think be patient, especially if you're in the cover. Like sometimes it takes them a little while to get somewhere. Deer either move fast or slow. That's like how they do stuff, right? And unless it's the rut and they're cruising – they're either, like, getting somewhere in the morning, early season, or they're, like, just lackadaisically walking back. And it might be 9 o'clock before they end up where you're at. And, in fact, sometimes they're waiting on the morning thermals to kick in before they actually move to a place. So you got to let that sun get up so that, you know, they'll have a consistent wind and know kind of where they need to go for the day. So I think that would be one of my big things is to be patient.
Yeah.
How to find potential buck bedding while e-scouting a property?
Tyler, you're the best at this. So.
This is September and October. I mean, kind of goes back to earlier what I answered. Here's a thought first before I say this. Buck bedding is a term that is used often in the last couple of years. And, man, buck bedding south of the Mason-Dixon is maybe a little bit of a farce or something like that. You know, it's like it can happen. There can be a buck that beds in a certain location like 5 days a week. You know, it can happen, but we don't see it often. And I think that when you hear the term buck bedding, a lot of times you hear it or it originated from somebody who is very far north in the U.S. a lot of times, or pretty far north, which ends up meaning that if you don't hunt that area, then it may not apply to you. Mm-hmm. And those areas are a lot of times in hill country or have different elevation changes, and or they're in marshes where there's only so much dry ground to bed on. And if you don't live in hill country or in a marsh, then those are two places, you know, those are kind of the two places that I think of buck bedding. I think more in terms of deer bedding, and then sometimes you can observe or sit as an observation sit to figure out if there is a buck that is bedding in that area. But for instance, like, I mean, this is far north, but it's not a marsh and it's not hill country. But in South Dakota last year, if you watched Buck Truck on the Meat Eater channel, you saw me bed a buck and go in and hunt him and shoot him that evening. But guess what? The evening before, Eric and I sat in the same place and saw two bucks, including a small one, but one that was bigger than the one I even shot, both come out of that area in where they were bedded. And we did not see either one of those the entire next day from the time the sun came up to the sun went down. And we only were gone from there for a couple hours eating lunch. And so they were nowhere to be found. So you could call it buck bedding because there were some bucks bedded back in there. But there was also does bedded back in there. The first one that came out that evening I shot was a doe. Mm-hmm. And so it's really, I think people need to just make sure and understand that, like, finding a buck's particular bed and just hunting that buck, might be just a dream that happens every once in a while if you don't hunt in the right area or whatever. And it might even be, it might even be a little bit of hyperbole when you hear about it. So I guess my point is that's my big disclaimer to say, find deer bedding. And the way to do that, typically, I like to see, if you're looking for bucks too, especially, I like to see a place that the food source is far enough away from a road that they would feel comfortable at least, well, it didn't even have to be that far from the road, actually. If you want to shoot them close to the food source, then it does. But otherwise, if it's the right food source, they'll destinate there. And then from that food source, typically like, I don't know, quarter mile, anywhere up to close to a mile from that food source, an area that's very remote, far from parking, far from human activity, and potentially has like some sort of water that can grow brush around it.
I'm on that further.
Sorry that took so long, man.
It's okay. I was falling. I was tracking. I have a little theory I developed while you were doing this.
All right.
You're talking about this. Because I was looking on the map today for buck bedding on a place that we hunt. And trails are going to show you that a lot of times. Especially when you're talking about bed to food. If you can look on the map and find trails, you're going to be able to find places that deer are bedding, because you'll see these places that the trails kind of spiderweb into, and then they don't leave from the other side, right? So you know those deer are staying in that area. And I think that especially bucks, but deer in general, they kind of reset every night or every morning, every day. So like they only know what goes on in their world from what they perceive. And I think that bucks, I'm going to have to follow this throughout the year as a theory, but I think that bucks like to cover more distance so that they can perceive more about their area and know what's going on in their area. You know what I mean?
Like a buck, in preparation for the rut, you're saying?
Yeah, or even just in the day. Like, you know, you can think about it like in a rut situation. The reason bucks are cruising is because wherever they were, they didn't have what they wanted. Mm-hmm. So they are going and taking in more stimulus from other areas, right? And so even in a bed-to-food early season pattern, bucks are liable to want to cover more distance so they'll know what coyotes in the area, what hunters have been through there, what other bucks have walked through there, where do the does go, you know, however they think, right? But I think that they very well, because I've always been like, man, there's no rhyme or reason as to like why deer cover so much ground. You know, like some states we go, there'll be a food source. And then these deer walk by a whole bunch of good habitat to go bed over in that place. It's like, what are they? Oh, hi.
That's old hands. Glad wasn't on video.
You'd be like, why are they doing that? And I think it's just because the more ground they cover, the better they feel about their surroundings. Mm-hmm. So there might be something to that, to think about targeting buck bedding.
Dude, you know? Even on a micro level, you think about like the J-hook into a bed situation. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, the deer comes in to scent check, right? He's trying to learn more about that area before he beds in it.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So if he has to make a big old loop from where he's bedding, you know, go up a ridge and then drop into a field where it has a canal along the side of it, and he walks that whole thing to get to the food, well, he's done figured out who's in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, if he beds right on the edge of it, he doesn't really know what's going on except for what he can see.
Mm-hmm. Daggum, that deer are cool, man.
They are, man. That was a long-winded answer.
It was.
Sorry.
When do you all switch focus from water to pinch points?
So if we're talking about early season, probably, I bet I am almost always thinking about pinch points.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, pinch points in the rut are a little more effective. I get it, right? But you think about the deer you shot in South Dakota last year. You're still kind of hunting a pinch point, even though there's water there, right?
I mean, yeah. There, I mean, I wouldn't say he was forced to where I was at, but it's either walk in the open or walk near the tree line.
Dude, it's like, it's kind of common sense, and I'm not, this is a great question, but it's kind of common sense that at one point in my life, I spent a lot of time in the woods not seeing deer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided, you know, kind of in the back of my mind, I'm going to hunt a pinch point every time. And you start seeing deer because they have to be pinched. So, like, if you want to have efficient hunts, hunt a pinch point every time in some sense of the word, and you'll probably see and encounter more deer.
Man, it's really, like, I think there may be something there, too, where, like, you hunt pinch points a lot, too, because when you're pre-scouting on X, like, your whole mentality is when you're really starting to narrow down your spots, you've got, like, a bunch of them on the map, you're like, which one do I go to first? You're wanting to go to the one where you can shoot one with a bow. And for a bow hunter, it's typically, like, I need to be able to shoot 40 yards one way and 40 yards the other way, like, a 100-yard pinch. It gives me a lot of chance there, you know?
Yeah, dude, think about some of the places that we've hunted in more open states. You'll sometimes set up and be like, dadgummit, I'm just like taking out a swath, and he could walk over there, or he could walk over there, anywhere he wants to, and then you'll sit there and just watch deer all night and not have any shots, you know? So it's like those pinch points are where it's at.
They are, man, and we've seen it in Texas when we hunt on public. There's a place that we had a lot of good encounters last year, actually. And I think about this area, and it's very flat, right? There's a reason that nobody killed in that area. Because it's very flat. There ain't much to pinch them. There's a bunch of deer in there, though. Because, you know, it does. And so it's like, eventually, the odds are you'll run into one. But when you go out of state, you got like 5 days.
How much time do you have?
That's exactly right.
Manage your expectations and put yourself in the best situation possible.
What am I doing wrong? Only got deer. Only got deer on camera at night on public land.
You are not close enough to where they're bedding. That's the plain and simple of it. And here's the thing that's fun about public sometimes, because if this was you on private land, you're probably toast.
Yeah.
But on public, you have place, like, generally speaking, you have a way to find these deer or get closer to where they're bedding, because you have thousands of acres a lot of times. And so, so let's just think about the first nice buck I ever chased on Texas public land. We called him Teenager. And I found him at night close to a food source, and I was able to go, he's coming from that direction, so I'm going to move a camera to my next that direction a couple hundred yards and see if I can pick him up on my next idea of a pinch point or whatever, right? Didn't find him. Moved the camera again to a different direction, in, you know, same direction, general direction he came from, but just a different place that there was a pinch point a couple hundred yards from that. And lo and behold, he's on there in daylight a bunch for in January, right after the season. And so that's the way to do it, essentially, in my opinion, is just find out which way these deer are coming from and just start backtracking down those trails. And you can do it as small increments as you want. But that's, I mean, if you really want to narrow down where they're bedding, that's where it's at. And it's not that you don't stand a chance. You just might have to wait till the rut if you want to hunt where your camera is.
There's two other things that I thought about in that situation, too. There's a chance you haven't found their most limited resource because that's probably the thing they're going to go to first. So whether that is food or water or, you know, if it's the rut, does, whatever it might be, there's a chance that you are just not quite on the thing that they want to be at, because deer will meander throughout the night and go try to eat this or whatever, and you might be getting some of that. The other thing is that you just might not be in good enough cover, because deer will daylight in places they feel comfortable in. But then, you know, we all know this. You drive down the road at night and you see deer in the road ditches because they have something to eat, but they have the cover of darkness, so they feel comfortable, right? So you're probably just in a place that they don't feel comfortable during the day. I'd say bail off in the cover and find a place to put your camera at in there.
Yeah, good thoughts.
Angel says, take me, question mark.
Angel, you know what? You get to proverbially go with us everywhere we go via the Element YouTube channel and the Meteor YouTube channel on the Buck Truck series, which, by the way, the final two episodes of Buck Truck are going to launch the first week of October?
I would not make any bold predictions here. But I would say that the latest on the street is last week of September, first week of October.
Okay.
Well, there's a couple more episodes, excuse me, that
Tyler's really excited about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean, we are excited about it.
We are, actually. Yeah, yeah, those episodes are really cool. But here's the thing, guys, is I think I've addressed this, but there's not a formally Buck Truck series coming out this year. So what that allows us to do is get a lot more stuff out to you a lot quicker. And potentially, I mean, you need to be subscribed to the Element channel, because there's going to be very potentially a lot of deer hunting videos coming out on the Element channel.
Our own Eric Gentry.
Let's go, dude.
He's going to be on there quite a bit.
Let's go.
Yep.
There is a question. Where's the Buck Truck heading this fall?
Well, it might be headed to your driveway. If you'd like to purchase a Buck Truck, reach out.
For real. Should have put it in that House of Oddities thing.
Yeah, we should have.
That's pretty odd. That would have
been a pretty good deal. Man. Man, I wish that's a good thought, dude. Yep. I wish we thought
just
about that.
Just hit me.
But they would have wanted me to donate it at that point in time. No, I wouldn't have done that.
Greg's the only one doing much donating
that's
around
right,
here.
That's right, donator. So, yeah. So the Buck Truck's heading a lot of places. The next place it is headed is New Mexico. Yeah.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there, because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land? Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today. Because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
All right, first year hunting Oklahoma on opening day. Going to be hotter than what he's used to. Any tips?
I'd wear minimal amounts of clothing.
I would too. Actually, so this would be a great question for our buddy Brian, who you've heard and seen on some of the podcasts and such. Brian is a very big proponent of using the First Light leafy suit with nothing on underneath.
That's right. So, however, I feel as if you're going to hike in, there might be a little rub involved with that. So you might want to be careful
on that deal. Yeah. But yeah, I think that would be it. Don't try to not sweat because you're not going to. You just have to make sure and just be real mindful of the wind. And I don't know if you smell any worse if you sweat, if you don't. I think deer smell you the same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think so too. People kind of overemphasize the sweat thing.
Yeah.
I think it's just the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, I would just probably wear something that keeps you cool.
The Trace stuff, man.
Trace stuff.
I like that stuff a lot.
Yeah.
If it's real humid, you're going to be hot no matter what. But that Trace stuff, if it's, you know, if you got any breeze or dry stuff at all, that stuff works.
It really does, man. It's pretty cool stuff.
And there's zips, man. You can get some ventilation.
That's right, dude.
Yeah.
Hip zips.
Yeah.
For early season tree stand hunting, do you favor morning or evening sits?
I'm an evening guy, like, year round, but it doesn't mean that I don't like morning.
Yeah, I'm mornings more in the early season. I think evenings, I mean, they're both great if you feel good about your setup. But evenings are a good time to, if you're in a place where you can make moves on deer, to maybe not be in a tree.
I like evenings because I like to be able to see as I access and get real sneaky and get up in there and get them killed.
That's a good point, too.
Is there spots you avoid in the mornings, and do you panic if you're running late?
KC doesn't.
I couldn't.
For sure.
I mean, I couldn't live if I panicked if I was running late. Now, the running late thing, I do run late sometimes, but it's not always. A lot of times I run late because there's, like, just circumstances, right? Like, Eric and I, the other day, we had, like, a great plan, and then there were trucks there, and it ruined it, and all of a sudden running late and panicking, right? But I think for sure we've hit it a few times, but it's worth saying I avoid the food sources in the morning. Do not go and bump deer off a field.
Yeah, so even close to the food source, because as you're going in, deer might be seeing the first light even better than you are, and they're leaving the field and working their way back slowly. So you might be 300 yards from the field and still be – so that's where, like, doing those loops and stuff might be pretty good. Idea.
This is from Timber Ninja. Have you tried the guacamole? How do you say tacky? Tacky? I don't know. How
Takis.
You say
Takis. Okay. No, I don't eat that trash, man.
Some my kids probably free. Have. Journey, have you tried the guacamole tackies? Takis? Takis? Guacamole? Oh.
Good. Way to go.
What's wrong with Takis?
They're disgusting.
That's right. They're gross.
Disgusting. Oh, are they good? Well, Jet says
they're approved.
Yep.
All right. What's the most important thing to consider for early season hunts?
Man, that's a very general and broad question. But if you're thinking about whitetail tactics, whitetail tactics wise, we just go back to what we said with the finding the food source.
I think that's exactly it. Yeah. I mean, at that time of the year, the deer don't have anything else on their minds except living.
Yeah.
So they have to eat.
And part of that living that time of year in a lot of places is fat reserves that they're – so they literally – it's not even like they're just, you know, eating because they're hungry.
It's not maintaining.
Yeah. It's like they're eating so much food, especially up north, man. Like – those deer are fat in September, man.
I think maybe then there's something to that to get a little bit deeper. Early season, deer are going to do the same thing every day until something bumps them or they change their pattern because, you know, they start to feel a little ruddy or whatever. So maybe if you want a different answer than food, it's go in to kill. Don't go in and bump them because you're kind of halfway working or whatever, because you're going to mess up the pattern. Mm-hmm. Like there is a lot of times there is a just set up pattern as long as they haven't been messed with. And if you pick the right day, you can go kill them.
Yeah. I would say also, if you're thinking about like early October, you grunted in a deer one time.
Mm-hmm.
So, even on those patterns, when you start getting just into October and the nights start getting cooler, it's not a bad idea if you throw out the Hail Mary grunt call because it can work like it did that day.
What is the best method for spotting stock in thick timber with a bow? No saddle.
I'd say just be super quiet and slow.
Mm-hmm.
And try to
work the opposite direction that deer are working. And if you could, if you can see a deer before it sees you and get real still, then you can shoot it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to have, you go back to the food source thing, you're going to have deer that travel to a food source from a bedding area, and then a lot of times, maybe even they like that spot because they're going into the wind. So maybe use like the 90-degree rule that we talk about, mm-hmm. where you're working kind of across the wind, trying to get into those deer, right? And then, like Casey said, I don't think you can work slow enough almost. I mean, three small, quiet steps and glass.
Yeah.
You know?
I almost want to change my answer. I don't think you can spot and stalk deer in the timber. You can still hunt.
Yeah.
Which is probably, people use that a little bit synonymously, but yeah, they're two different things, right? Spot and stalk is like you see it and then you walk in range and shoot it, and you could do it. I shouldn't say can't, but it is not very effective. Still mm-hmm. hunting, I think, is the way to do it.
For sure.
Yeah.
For
like, sure. Once you're like on a deer, let them come to you.
Yeah. I kind of assumed that
yeah.
that's what he meant.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's what I was saying, is basically you're still hunting, which is very, very slow stalking through the woods, essentially. And you just want to glass as much as possible, I think. Because even in the woods, you're looking at stuff 100 yards plus sometimes. And it's maybe just a couple of gaps, but you got to be able to see that deer as soon as he is within your sight. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he's going to see you.
How do you approach getting to hunt a new piece of land you didn't get to scout beforehand?
I feel like you have to start on X. I mean, I would for sure, even if it was like, oh, well, you know, there's a truck in your spot and you don't have any, you know, plan B's. I mean, I'm going straight to Onyx.
Mm-hmm.
Or if somebody was like, hey, I'm going to helicopter drop you off Bear Grylls style in this spot. I guess, I don't know how else this happens, but, as soon as I hit the ground, I'm on it on X. And so the first thing I'm doing, and I don't know if this is like an e-scout question or not, but that is how I'm scouting it. And I'm basically using just my experience and knowledge hunting over the whole course of my life for the last over 25 years to make assumptions about where deer will be based off of what time of year it is, what the temperatures are, and what other resources are in the area. Thinking about the limited resource that Casey talked about and making assumptions. And then from there, it's just going and doing what Casey's taught me the last several years and just seeing everything with your eyes all yeah. at once.
You
and
know,
asking the question why all yeah, the time.
That's a good point. We we got us a Texas deer lease this year, and the guy we leased from had a couple different places that we could choose from. And he's kind of old school. And I was like, can you send me pins to all those places? And he could, but he was like kind of taken back that that's what I wanted. And I didn't want pictures from his phone that he sent. I was like, no, I want to be able to look at it on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's exactly the right thing. And then once you establish the place that you're going to, you probably need to just – there's like a fork in the road. And you need to decide if you're going to trophy hunt or if you're going to deer hunt.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to trophy hunt, I would say – put a bunch of cameras on that thing. That would be the thing to do to figure out what is the biggest deer on the property and like what and make like a hit list and do the whole thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're just trying to deer hunt, have fun, go out there, use your woodsmanship, set up and shoot a deer. That's kind of, I think that might be another thing to throw in there. It's like you need to decide how you're going to approach the property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trying to shoot the big deer trophy hunting and stuff, you might play a little more conservative, even in your scouting,
mm-hmm.
you know, on the ground scouting.
There's nothing wrong with in-season scouting either, finding mm-hmm. signs during the season. So.
Yeah. Like, you talking about, like, crop circles and stuff?
Oh, or, yeah, that's yeah. it. final two questions.
Oh, my goodness.
What's your preferred spine for arrows, heavy or more flexible?
Okay, so the person who's asking this question, it seems like they're trying to dabble into kind of the deeper parts of archery, which is like arrow building and setups and tuning and all that. I'm going to try to approach this like in a, how do you say this? I'm not trying to tell you that you're dumb or anything, right? But that there's not really a thing called preferred spine. Spine is the stiffness of the arrow in relation to your bow setup. And it's pretty much a set number depending on point weight, and draw length. So, like, there's not really a preferred spine, but I think what you're trying to get at is maybe, like, arrow weight, because spine is different than that. Spine is a stiffness. There are light, very stiff arrows, and there are heavy, very stiff arrows, and there are light, flexible arrows, and there are light, and there are heavy, flexible arrows, okay? So don't think that spine means weight, because they're two different scales, right? It's just, think of it like a plastic straw and a piece of spaghetti, right? They're probably about the same weight, but that piece of spaghetti has a lot higher spine than the plastic straw does, okay? So in general, we all end up shooting a heavier spined arrow because we, all of us shoot 70 pounds. Eric and I are like a 28-inch draw, right? 28.5. Tyler's 29.5. So, like, we need a heavier spined arrow. If you are a shorter draw length, you're going to want a lighter spine because, for one thing, your arrow is shorter, and a lot of times you're not putting out as much energy from your bow because of that. So I think all that to say, don't think of spine as something that's adjustable. You pretty much are set at a certain spine for your setup. Now, to answer the question I think this person is asking, do I prefer heavier or lighter setups? I like to err a little bit on the heavier side. In most situations, for whitetail, because I just like to be able to shoot whatever broadhead I want to and know I'm going to punch through the animal.
Ditto.
I don't know if y'all can tell, but it's not that Tyler can't, but he just doesn't really care to clog his mind with a lot of that information.
No,
on the spine.
I can't. I'm very similar. Like, shoot heavier. Casey shoots a little bit heavier than I do, but I would consider it a heavier arrow. And I would give the advice that you can go to your local archery shop and they give you at least a decent idea what your spine should
be most of the time. That's a great point, dude. Like, go to a reputable archery shop, and, like, if you don't want to have to mess with that stuff, you don't have to.
Yep.
Yep.
All right, last question. Favorite movie of all time?
Well, I've got three to choose from.
I guess that's the one you've watched.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a tough one, though. I don't know, man. Was it Spectre by Golden or James Bond Spectre series, or from the James Bond series, the Spectre movie? I think, is that the one that opens up with that epic, like, multi-storied building scene?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it.
That opening scene of Spectre, I think it is, was insane. That was, I think, was that Daniel Craig's first?
I've never watched a Daniel Craig James Bond.
They're good.
Yeah, I bet.
It was weird because I grew up with Pierce Brosnan, mm-hmm. and that was like, dude,
he is James Bond.
He is the James Bond. Yeah. Like he, his name is not actually Pierce Brosnan, right?
Yeah.
But that was a good one for sure. But I don't know, Sandlot's up there for me too.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Eric, you're gonna have to answer this question too. So think about yours.
Well, he just said mine. So
Sandlot's it.
No. Yeah. Okay. I'll choose a different
one. Cardinals in the outfield or whatever it's called.
It's Moneyball or Sandlot. So.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. I never watched Moneyball. Man, that's a hard thing for me to answer too, because I really liked Two Towers, which was the second in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and then probably Revenge of the Sith, which is episode 3 of Star Wars. It's in the prequels, episode 3. I like fantasy, if you can't tell. And to tell you what, dude, it's kind of a cliche answer, but Avatar, the first one, was bad to the bone. Like,
I saw it at an IMAX.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Me too. And it wasn't like it was the best movie, but the special effects or mm-hmm. whatever, you know, the animation was just insane, right? So, I don't know. Those are my off-the-cuff answers, I think.
Cool. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't answer.
Well, Moneyball or Sandlot's Moneyball. Mine.
Not okay. Hardball?
No. Well, Hardball's good,
what
too,
about the
actually.
Rookie? Do you like the Rookie?
It's all right.
It's all
about
right.
Angels in the Outfield or Cardinals in the Outfield, yeah.
No. What about what's the Robert Redford baseball movie? I like that one a lot.
I don't think I know.
And it's like, oh, man.
The Natural.
Yeah. That was good.
Yeah.
And then Kevin Costner had a couple of good baseball movies. Mm-hmm. What was the name of the Field of Dreams is my least favorite of those. I liked Bull Durham. whole lot. And then there was another one that was just a little bit more of a like a nice story. Do you remember what that was?
I can't think of the name though. So
what's the name of Wild Thing? What's the name of that movie?
Major League.
Major League, dude. Yeah. Major League's a classic. Yep. It's real good too. Oh, it's awesome.
Imagine that.
What about what's the one Kevin Hart and Will Ferrell were in? Get Hard.
It's a cop movie.
Funny, man.
Yeah.
Those guys are hilarious.
Oh yeah. Maybe we should break that down into like
favorite genre.
Comedy. Yeah. What's your favorite comedy?
Yeah, that one's good. I mean, that one is a good one.
Which one?
The Get Hard or whatever it's called. Yeah. I like that
Kevin
one.
Hart.
I'm trying to think. I feel like there's another one that I really like comedy-wise.
Man, we're probably dating ourselves as millennials, but I think a lot of us are going to say Will Ferrell movies. You know? Talladega Nights is one of my favorite comedies of all time.
I don't even know if I've seen the whole thing.
Oh, my gosh.
I've seen most parts of it, though.
Yeah. That and Happy Gilmore, it's hard to beat.
Classic.
Yeah. We were talking about that. See, in youth class, we were talking about Happy Gilmore the other day because even the kids, like, you know, 10-year-old kids love Happy Gilmore.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. So Adam Sandler is timeless.
Yep.
He is. He's a talented guy.
He is.
Good basketball player. Yeah. He's good at – he plays guitar, too, I think.
Does he?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How about that? What's yours? Favorite comedy?
Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness, dude.
It's pretty good. You know, I'm not – I think that's like a classic movie for our generation, but it's not one of my favorites. Yeah. It's good.
No, Ace Ventura.
Oh, that is hard to beat. Dude. Jim Carrey, dude, funny guy.
He is a hilarious guy. Yeah. When Nature Calls?
Yeah.
Is that the one where he does the he's in the Jeep just like it's a smooth road, but he looks
there's something in my teeth.
I hold silver away.
Okay. This kid, favorite animated movie, Eric?
Which ones have I seen? Have I seen one?
Yeah, Mario? You've seen a ton of animated movies.
I saw Mario.
Dude.
I don't even know.
Yeah?
Does Ninja Turtles count?
No.
No, I don't know. Because that's claymation,
yeah,
I guess.
Claymation or something. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I don't know. I don't really have one.
If he's Space thinking Jam? About claymation, then his favorite is it Rudolph?
Yeah, the Rudolph movie.
Because he's in it.
Oh, yeah.
Cornelius.
UConn Cornelius.
UConn Cornelius. Yeah, that's
him.
Eric.
I guess Space Jam. I don't know.
There's some animation to that. I'll give you that one. Yeah.
And that's a good one. Might be mine, too.
It's Cassie's favorite. I really like Aladdin a lot.
Dude, the new Aladdin is rock and roll, dude. Yeah. That thing is cool. Yeah.
Yeah, Will Smith is the genie. It just didn't sell to me.
Well, dude, this is before all that.
What? No, I'm just saying. I'm not saying like his slap thing.
He was really good.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of all that, do you remember All That? It was like the kid version of SNL when we were younger.
Yeah, I remember that.
Like All That note.
Yeah, that's it. I always liked the that slime thing on Nickelodeon, whatever that was called.
Mm-hmm. Favorite childhood cartoon.
Like what I watched, or like
You had to have watched it, right? But like
watch?
Cartoon you watched a lot.
I didn't really watch a lot of Land Before Time.
Oh,
yeah,
that's a movie though.
Well, it was animated cartoon. You mean like a series?
Like a TV? Yeah, like on TV? Yeah.
When's your childhood end?
18, according to Americans.
Well, maybe. If you say like 13, there was a series called Batman Beyond, which was kind of like an edgy Batman that was kind of like for, you know, preteens. I thought it was pretty cool. Yeah.
I loved Recess.
It was pretty
good. That's a good one.
Yeah.
TJ Detweiler.
I forgot about that.
Mikey.
Yeah.
I'd have
Mikey
to say,
Snyder.
I'd probably go with Rocket Power.
I don't even know what that is.
You don't remember Rocket Power?
Well.
You remember Pepper Ann?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You sing that all the time. Pepper Ann. And there's something with your sister in Pepper Ann.
Yeah. She's like, I guess she just loves those theme songs so much.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I pretty much only watch action and comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, honestly, what are the vampire movies that we watch?
Transylvania? Transylvania?
Hotel Transylvania. Those are hilarious.
Pretty funny.
That's Adam Sandler. He's Dracula.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Those are good.
To wrap it up, favorite classic outdoor TV show?
Man, of all time? Like series or
episode? Yeah, do whatever you want to with it.
Does that count? Crocodile Hunter? Does that count?
What is that?
Mm-mm.
Crocodile
Hunter? Is that the Steve Irwin Hunter? Show? Is that what it's called? Crocodile Hunter? That's not what it's called, is it? Is that what it's called? Do you remember that? Or what?
Isn't it? Now I'm like questioning my... Yeah, it was Steve Irwin, right?
Crocodile Hunter is the name of the show?
I have to look this up now. You got me weirded out.
I mean, that's like his name.
Everything else about him except that.
Yeah.
Steve and Terry Irwin, Bendy, and whatever their son's name is.
Bambi. Yeah, I've typed in Crocodile Hunter and Steve Irwin came up.
Okay.
The crocodile, known as the Crocodile Hunter. Yeah. Right. That's what I thought, but then he was like making me question my entire
childhood. No, I don't remember the name of the show at all.
Yeah, I don't know if you can say that one.
No.
No, that's not really. It's got to be hunting, right? Or fishing.
Which I did watch Steve catch a pig one time. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It was like in a waller, and he just went out there and grabbed it.
I know your favorite.
What's that?
Jose Wehembe.
I liked that. Well, I was thinking hunting, but Jose Wehembe's Spanish Fly was good.
Yeah.
It's a good show. Yeah.
Okay, so can we do fishing and hunting?
Sure.
All right. Let me think about this. You got one yet?
Not really. I mean, I never
you didn't
really
grow
had
up
a,
watching it though.
Right. I mean, I did. But it was like I didn't have a favorite. It was like I liked Jim Shockey. I liked Lee and Tiffany. I mean,
my favorite was the Ranch Buck.
So growing up, there was like kind of three or four camps, right? Mm. So there was like the real tree stuff. There was the Mossy Oak stuff. There was the Primos stuff, and then...
I feel like Primos and Mossy Oak were in the same.
Kind of, but Mossy Oak was its own deal, though, too.
Yeah.
You know, Cuz and all them. I was a real tree guy. I liked real tree. I like because they traveled kind of up north and went to cool places and stuff, so I think real tree outdoors, like the original stuff, is my favorites.
The first DVD, or DVD, the first VHS, first video I ever bought that was a hunting video was Whistling Wings 1.
Mm.
And I think it was 1, maybe in 2. But I ended up buying several more after that, and that was Mossy Oak, Toxie Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was the coolest thing ever, dude. I would watch them every night going to bed. Same VHS over and over and over again. So I can remember that. But I think, like, as I kind of grew up, I remember, like, even in college – I watched Real Tree Road Trips all the time. And, like, I mean, Michael Waddell was the man, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
In college, we were watching a lot of Jim Shockey. My friends were all rifle hunters, you know, and we were into, like, that kind of Western thing or whatever. So we watched a lot. Like, when Uncharted came out, which I think was the other show, right? It was.
That's Shockey's show.
Yeah, it was the second show he had or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, when that came out, we were, like, scheduling our weeks around it to watch it when it premiered and stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's cool.
About fishing.
Favorite fishing show? I was enamored with saltwater when I was a kid. So, like, I watched anything saltwater I could. And I think there's a couple. So, there was The Hunt for Big Fish with Larry Dahlberg.
Man, I was thinking that was a different guy.
Was one of my... top things I watched. And then Mark Sosin had some good fishing stuff I used to watch. He had a weird hat. he did.
Fishing guys, he got weird hats. Bill Dance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Custom made. They have to be. There's no way that hat sold anymore.
I liked Jimmy Houston and Roland Martin a lot.
Yeah.
Those guys, I watched them a lot.
I watched a show when I was little, came on after school, and I'd just run in there at the lodge, my dad's fishing place that they had, and we had a little tiny TV that sat in the kitchen, you know, probably like a less than 144p these days.
Yeah,
you know?
Oh yeah. You could see the red, blue, green stripes in the
old TV. And there was a local show because we only got like Channel 7, and it was called Larry and Barry. I think it's called Honey Hole Fishing with Larry and Barry,
I
think.
Honey Hole. I remember Honey Hole Outdoors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then they fished for largemouth bass, pretty much.
Is that the same Barry as Barry East Texas Outdoorsman? Barry or whatever?
I imagine. I don't know.
Because what was that guy's name? But he did that East Texas fishing stuff,
And that's where I first saw doodle socking. You know what doodle socking is? They take a big old cane pole and you tie like an AC plug or something, like a topwater, 6 inches from the end of the tip. And you just go down the bank and you just splash the water with the end of that pole the whole time, and bass will come up and hit that lure. Pretty cool.
Doodle socking.
We might need to try it sometime.
Yeah.
It's like an old technique of fishing, you know?
Sounds kind of fun.
Yeah.
Doodle socking, huh?
Yeah. Anyways, all right, that's your early season whitetail podcast, guys. Thanks for the questions. Hope you got to go down memory lane with us as well, and I hope you kill a really, really big buck in the early season this year. Remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29th, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30th, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1st, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.